What's going on, Sens fans? Welcome back to another New Era Sens podcast. And today we're on video as well. You might be watching this on YouTube or listening to it on Spotify or whatever you're listening to it on. But we're going to get back into things and get going on YouTube. So we'll start off quick. How you doing, Jordan?
Doing good. Just watching the playoffs, watching the Euros, just keeping busy.
Yeah, I'm not too huge into soccer, so I've been kind of staying back on that. But I do want to quickly give my thoughts out to the Eriksson family. Obviously, it was a scary scene in the Denmark-Finland game. He seems to be doing much better now, so good news there.
I saw that live, and it was terrifying.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I didn't see it, and I don't really want to. Same with all the guys that have collapsed on the benches and all that. And, like, John Tavares, I don't want to see that all the time. Like, maybe out live, see what happens and whatnot. But I'm glad all this stuff is deleted off the internet. So,
yeah, it's good just out of respect for him and his family. Like, no one wants to see that over and over again. And they did a good job of just, like, they showed it when it happened the first time, and they realized how bad it was. They cut all the feed, and it was just silence.
Yeah, and I noticed that all the players were standing around him and, like, holding blankets up and just trying to keep the cameras off and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just quickly wanted to mention that, get that out of the way. I'm really excited to be doing this video because we're going to be doing some more YouTube videos, especially Jordan and I. We have some ideas for some Sens content coming up, so make sure you're looking out for that. Let's just get into some Sens talk. We have the 10th overall pick. What do you do with it? Obviously, we can trade it. We can draft with it. We can move up or down. What are your expectations going into the draft?
I think the safe bet is just to keep the pick and take whoever you want, whoever they feel is the best player. So that's the safe bet, because I don't think trading up and down is the best this year, because I think everyone's thoughts on this draft is the same, that it's a bit weaker and somewhat under-scouted, and for Ottawa to trade down, someone would have to be willing to trade up, so it's a two-way street that way. So I think it's either they keep it or trade it, and if they keep it, like, probably getting to my hopes too high, but I'm set on getting McTavish at 10. He just is the most Sens pick I've ever seen. Like, pro fan, like, dad played pro, local guy, physical kid, late season riser. Like, it's the most Ottawa Sens pick I've ever seen. So he's the one I'm probably going to be disappointed when he goes, like, third. But
yeah,
he's the guy I want.
Yeah, it'll be such a wide open draft that you almost won't even know what to do with it until it's your time to pick, because you don't know who's going to be on the board. Like, we could see people we've never heard of taken in the top 10, top 15. Like, this draft is so strange because, like, a team like Buffalo, they have the first overall pick. I'm willing to bet they're going to take Owen Power only because that's the consensus, because Buffalo doesn't have a scouting team. Like,
no,
they don't have any scouts. So I don't know, like, they're going to draft whoever Craig Button tells them to. And then you have teams like Ottawa, who at 10 might take somebody who nobody's heard of because they've been watching so much hockey just online.
Yeah. And if you take Simmer at his word on Twitter, like, he put that little nugget of information out there. They're really high on some lesser known European skater. So no idea who that is, or if it's just Simmer being Simmer and just stirring the pot for fun. But, which I wouldn't doubt. But it's an interesting thing, just because it's so, like, someone like Lysell, I've seen this highly ranked as 2 and low as 25. Yeah. Same for someone like Edvinson. Like, I've seen him in the top 5 down near the 20s. Like, it's so wide open. Yeah. But, yeah, and if they decide to trade the pick, I'm hoping for a younger type play, like mid-20s, guy like in his prime, or is going to be in his prime for the next few years. So the guy I'm looking at, I think, is probably the most available, would be Reinhardt from Buffalo. So he's the one, because he had a great year, like, transitioned back to center when Eichel went down, and I think he's only 25. I believe he's an RFA right now. I don't think he has a contract, so you'd have to work that out.
Just coming off a 1 year, $5.3 million.
Yeah, so if you work out a long-term thing, because you don't want to walk him to free agency if he goes to arbitration. So he's the guy I look at. And maybe, like, the Dubois Line A trade was just a failure for both teams somehow. So maybe you can try and buy low on Dubois, since he had such a rough go. So I'd look at that.
That I've seen a lot of. And like with Dubois, I'm all for it. Until maybe yesterday, the day before, I haven't heard anything about him being available, Winnipeg being unhappy with him. And like, yeah, maybe he didn't come in and play excellent, but I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard anything at all other than just a couple people saying that Dubois is selling low right now and we could buy low. And yeah, I don't know. Definitely something I would get on top of, but Reinhardt right now is my number one guy as well. Yeah. He's just, I mean, 25 goals this year. Like, what? That's good in a normal year, especially for a guy like Reinhardt. He's going to be dirt cheap because he is an RFA and doesn't want to be in Buffalo. So, I think Reinhardt's the play if he can. A lot of other people to think about with that is Giroux. Seth Jones maybe is out there. The thought of Dougie Hamilton being signed and traded. There's a ton of people that make sense to be here. And we'll get into a pretty specific one here in a minute. Overall, I think I completely agree with you. McTavish is my guy at 10, and Reinhardt is my guy with the pick. So,
perfect.
You'll be able to actually see all of our draft picks and our mocks. We're going to be doing a mock draft on Friday together, and so that'll be fun. Make sure you look for that. It'll either be out Friday night or Saturday afternoon, just depending on what time we record and whatnot. But it'll be fun to do a mock draft, kind of see who has what sleepers and just kind of how it's going to work. Because, again, we have different views of this draft because we've seen nothing really. I don't know. It'll be weird.
No, it'd be fun just seeing some off the board picks, like someone that you thought was going to go 25th ends up going 7th somehow. It'll be a fun little thing to do. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ian Mendez and Eric Stevens, if you don't know who Eric Stevens is, he's the beat writer for The Athletic in Anaheim. They wrote an article together, and it was actually a really good article because not very often you get both sides of the story. So it's in the end, it was just kind of talking about like the availability of who, what Anaheim would do and whatnot. But in the end, the suggested mock trade by Ian Mendez was Adam Henrique and Josh Manson for Logan Brown, Tyler Cleven, and a second. What do you think about that?
I think the big thing, like, I actually really like that trade from both sides. The one sticking point, because I know they talked about the article, was the potential of Henrique being like 50 some type of salary retention. Yep. And I don't know if that was for the full contract or some form of retention. Like, if that's for 50% of Henrique's contracts, I'm all for that trade. Because Henrique at like 2.9 for 3 years, that's a good deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then Logan Brown, like I still believe Logan Brown is an NHL, can be an NHL player, but I think it's just time to move on from him. Like, wish nothing but the best for him, but I don't see him in Ottawa next year. Cleven, I like Cleven, but he's probably like a bottom pair PK defenseman at best.
Yep.
And then the second round pick's the second round pick, so whatever. And then, Josh Manson is, like, a good, solid, like, defensive defenseman, plays physical. I think he's 29. So 1 year left on the contract. If he does well, you can re-sign him. If not, hopefully by that point, Thompson or Bernard Docker are ready to step in. And then Henrique just kind of shows he can still play at the Worlds with Connor Brown and Mangiapane. They're, one of the best lines in the tournament.
Yep.
So, even if it's just the full contract for Henrique, I'd probably still do it because I do think Henrique is still a good player. And even though it is nice to think Pinto can slide right into the second line center spot, there is a likely chance he may struggle or need some seasoning. So getting someone like Henrique that is a proven player, I like the trade.
Yeah, and at that point, if you get him at 50% at 2.9 mil, you're not worried about playing him up in the top six. Like at that point, he's just part of your center depth and will play wherever you need him to. So I think this trade makes a ton of sense, especially in the fact that, again, like you said, with Logan Brown, I think his time is done in Ottawa, and it's just been really unfortunate with injuries. Ottawa went into a rebuild right around the time they drafted him, and he just got pushed down the depth charts. And it was never meant to be, I guess, with him in Ottawa. And like you said, I hope he goes on to Anaheim in this situation and does great. It's nothing against him at all. And he does have the skill set, but it's just not working in Ottawa. So yeah. I do think using him as a trade chip is good. How much he's worth right now to other teams, I'm not sure. And Tyler Cleven, almost the same way. We have a left D of Shabbat, Brännström, Sanderson, and Mete right now. One of them is going to have to go next year as it is. Yeah. We can afford to drop another, and he would be good as a bottom pair PK guy, like you said. But for this trade, it makes sense. You're getting a top pair right-handed D who is a PK guy. And the second round pick. I mean, we've hit huge draft picks with that. We've also missed quite a few with that. So it is what it is. Depends on who, what year, what's going on. Like, the draft picks are so ish. So I do 100% agree, especially after watching Henrique and Connor Brown destroy the world tournament. I'm all for it. I think that's pretty good trade too for both teams.
Yeah, because I know there's going to be some, like, I don't know how many people have read it yet, but I know there's going to be a section of Sens fans online that are going to think it's like a Stepan trade 2.0, how they gave up a second round pick for Stepan. But Henrique is a better player than Stepan is right now. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's not the same thing. And especially if you can get some retention on the contract, it's well worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would almost even go as far to say as Manson is more valuable than Stepan right now. Like, to this team at least, I think Manson could come in and play a big role.
Oh, for sure. And he's such a DJ Smith type player too. Like, DJ loves his physical defensive guy, so he'll probably be named assistant captain somehow. Like, DJ will love the guy.
That's a pretty interesting trade. Shout out to Ian Mendez for writing that one up, and Eric Stevens. I think it would be beneficial for both teams to at least think about. So next up, we have a lot of drama going on in the Sens community. Yeah. Jack Capuano was denied the right to interview in Buffalo by the Ottawa Senators. So I understand it. You like your coaching staff. It works. Obviously, we saw that at the end of the year. Things are getting better. But to turn down a guy to go for a head coach job, it sucks, but I get it. So I really don't know what to think. I haven't had a ton of time to let this kind of settle in and think about. But, yeah, I don't know. And then Friedman also says in his 31 thoughts that there are now hard feelings between Jack and the Senators. So that's not great. I completely understand why he would be upset. I also completely understand why Ottawa would say no. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the situation?
At first, I didn't think why it was such a big deal, because this happens more than people think. It just usually doesn't get reported on. Because I know, like, Ottawa tried to interview DJ Smith when he was still with Toronto, and they said no.
Yep.
So, like, this happens more than people think. And, like, I get the argument that if you're not going to promote Capuano internally into some type of head coach role down the line, then you might as well let him go and try and promote, like, get a better job, better pay, and like a chance to become a head coach again, because he was like what head coach of the Islanders for like 10 years.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like that big of a story, but him getting like on bad terms now with the Sens organization, like, that just kind of came out of left field. Like, I get it. And he did have a good world championships with Team USA, so they probably just raised his value as a coach.
Yeah.
Like, I think people were kind of overblowing it. And like, if Capuano wanted to leave, I don't know why. It's not like he's the best assistant coach in the league. I don't know why he's such a high-value piece for the team. I get not wanting to lose an asset. Like, he is an asset. He's a coach. He's on the contract. So it's the Sens' right to say, no, you can't go and go to Buffalo until your contract's up. But I just don't think it's a big deal. And I think it's just kind of, people are trying to find things to be mad about right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, too. I mean, I'm sure that there are some people that could come in here right now and convince me otherwise up a good argument. But, like, I don't understand why it's such a big deal and why everybody's raving about it. Like, he's an assistant coach for us. I don't know. Regardless of whether he was allowed to talk to Buffalo or he was denied, people would be upset about it. People would be upset that we're letting our coach that's under contract talking about a new job somewhere else. And I mean, realistically, who wants a job in Buffalo right now?
Nobody.
It's not likely that he's going to take it. He's probably not the best candidate available. Obviously, they've talked to some other people. Gallant just got hired in New York, so
yep.
That's another name off the pages. But yeah, I don't know. I don't understand the huge deal.
Yeah, I think if the thing that gets sends fans and sends Twitter up in arms is the assistant coach potential, not even assistant, the associate coach leaving yeah. for another team, I think we're doing pretty fine. Like, yeah, it's the most sends thing. Like, oh, front office, management, ownership. Like, I don't even know who's official, like, who said no. But why can't they just be normal and not cause drama in the offseason? Even this yeah. is like such minor drama. Like, it's not even that big of a deal. And it's just like, oh, Ottawa's doing nothing lately. Just might as well talk about something. So I think it's going to be, no one's going to be talking about this and probably forget about it in a week.
Oh, absolutely. Especially like once we see a Mete extension come in.
And, oh, for sure.
I mean, Brady any day now. Like, I'm just feeling it.
Oh, for sure.
There's going to be a lot of talk about in the Sens community. And I mean, the draft is coming up and all yep. this. So, like, it's a great time to be a Sens fan. We're on the up and coming. People are just, you need something to talk about sometimes. And it's yeah. it gets blown out of proportion because everybody starts talking about it. So, yeah, I don't know. We can move on to the kind of the rest of the league for a little bit. There's oh, yeah. four teams left. The New York Islanders and the Vegas Golden Knights are up 1-0 against the Tampa Bay Lightning and Montreal Canadiens, respectively. Mm-hmm. Who do you have in these semifinals and then winning the Stanley Cup?
So I'll start with the Vegas-Montreal side because I think we're probably both going to have the same answer. Like, I think Vegas is just going to steamroll Montreal. Like, Montreal's had a nice little Cinderella run this year, but realistically, they're the 18th place team in the league going up against the team that, like, I think there's a tiebreaker that cost Vegas the President's Trophy. Like, they're just up. I think it was the same record as Colorado, but anyway, yeah, it's very lopsided. Like, forward depth, Vegas, high end talent, Vegas, defensive core, Vegas, goaltending. Maybe even Nick Fleury's playing great, but yeah, I think that's just going to be a cakewalk for Vegas. Like, I don't really know how much of a chance Montreal has.
Yeah, I completely get that. I don't actually agree. I think Montreal is a team built for the playoffs, and I've been saying this all playoffs. I think, yeah, they underperformed and came 18th in the regular season, but I mean, you can't knock a team that just put out Toronto in 7 and then swept in the second round the Winnipeg Jets. I think with Carey Price, anything is possible. And that big, big blue line that they have, it's getting a little smaller with some injuries right now. They have, I'm not actually sure the size of Erik Gustafsson, but then Romanov, the rookie coming in, yeah. Who has looked fantastic. I don't know why he sat. He played like 52 of the 56 games this year. And then didn't play any playoff games.
I don't get that.
But I do think that this team has what it takes. I don't know if they can do it. I think, and obviously last night says otherwise, but I think that if this team can just score, they can win. And that is going to be their biggest problem because obviously you don't have Tatar producing. Obviously he's been a healthy scratch. Tatar producing like most people kind of expect him to.
Yeah.
And Drouin obviously is not in the lineup. He left for some personal reasons and wasn't performing all season. And like Kasperi Kotkaniemi, he isn't doing fantastic. He's playing good hockey in the playoffs, but he's not like putting up the big numbers like you'd expect. But I just think this team has everything but the scoring.
Yeah, and like I agree that Montreal is built for the playoffs. Like they're a very physical team that tries to roll four lines. And they do play the dump and chase heavy game. But I think Vegas is basically the same team with higher end skill. Like you got guys like Tuck, Kolesar, Waugh, Stone barreling down on you. And then like Petrangelo Martinez can both play physical. Same with like White Cloud. So, and like they're not like, I don't know the height of Vegas' blue line, but I know like Colorado is a small blue line and it kind of showed in their series. Yeah. Just like Girard and Makar aren't the biggest guys. But Vegas is a big team that will knock your head off. And you can get Ryan Reeves. Like I don't know who would even try and fight Ryan Reeves on Montreal.
Cole Caulfield.
Oh, I would pay the money for that. That would be amazing. But yeah, like I think Montreal is probably a bit better than the record. But like realistically, I look at Montreal and I just think they're a mediocre team with a really good goalie.
Yeah.
And understandable. Yeah, and like Josh Anderson, like I have not really noticed him all playoffs, and he was supposed to be the, like he's playing physical, but like I don't know his offensive production. Like, I know he got a goal in the first game against Toronto, but other than that, for a play a guy that's supposed to be a playoff performer, I have not seen him at all.
Yeah, he's only got like 2 or 3 points, I think. Yeah. And for a guy that you're paying $5.5 million to for the next 6 years after this,
whew. Oof. I don't think Montreal's going to be – like, they have a lot of good young pieces, but they got so much money locked up into Weber, Price, Anderson, Petrie, Byron for some reason. And, like, all these guys locked up for, like, the next 4 years at, like, 35, 40 million or whatever.
Yeah. They got a lot of money spent right now.
On a bunch of older guys that are just going to probably keep getting worse and worse.
Yeah, really, though. And, like, Weber hasn't been a top pairing guy. Like, he's been playing on the top pair with Sherratt, but he hasn't been playing, like, a top pairing defenseman.
Yeah, so. For sure.
So, yeah, I have Montreal in maybe 6 or 7. I think Vegas is the better team. I just it's hard to count Montreal out right now.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about the Islanders and the Lightning?
At first, I wanted to give, like, assume Tampa or just – not stomp them, but kind of just easily go through them like in 5 or 6. But I always discredit the Islanders, and I feel like a lot of people do. Yep. So, and even before, and low-key, I just want to see a Stone Patio finals so I can be happy no matter who wins. But that's just me being selfish. But especially after watching the first game, that was the most Islanders game I've ever seen, where they just get a lead and they just smother you, don't give you any chances. Make you make mistakes. Like Tampa's debatably the best team in the league, and they're what, like 9 turnovers, like no odd man rush chances. Like the Islanders just not toyed with them, but it's just they just made them play the game they wanted to play. And if the Islanders can only get 2 goals, like I think most teams would be like, okay, giving up 2 goals, that's fine. But the Islanders are one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they shut down Tampa's like $100 million offense.
Definitely the next topic we're going to be getting into.
Yeah.
But I think the Islanders played a fantastic game.
Yeah.
They did exactly what the Islanders do. They gave them absolutely nothing. And they stayed in their own zone very protectively, but always had a guy ready to go on the rush. And you saw that like with Barzal's goal, you saw that 7 other times each period in that game. Like it was just ridiculous. They just sit in their own end until Tampa screws up, and then they're just gone from the blue line. It's really boring hockey, but it's really exciting because so much of the game is just, you're just watching Tampa pass it around the outside of the boards, and then all of a sudden there's a rush, and then there's a save, and then it's the same thing, or it's a goal, and then it's the same thing. And you got to give huge respect to Barry Trotz for even trying this. Like, you don't see this game. Like, he never played this in Washington. He always played a pretty structured game in Washington, but you didn't see it quite like this. This is almost like Guy Boucher level with the 1-3-1.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just so repetitive, but it works. Like, you just can't really get around it. So, yeah, huge, huge credit to Barry Trotz for that and this Islanders team for just coming together.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not like, because I think a lot of people last year thought it was kind of a fluke, like one-off year, but it's a rematch of the Eastern Finals from last year. Like, the Islanders are a really good team. They may not have that star player. Like, Barzal is probably going to be that, like, in another year or two. But, like, it's just a team that actually rolls all 4 lines. Like, they have, like, Cizik. Like, Cizik has got an overtime winner, like, what, like, a few games ago against Boston. And he's just, like, a fourth-line guy. Like, they trust him to have him out there in overtime. So Barry Trotz, like, he's done a great job coaching this team because, like, in Washington, he had that high-end, like, superstar talent to work with. But in New York, he doesn't have that, but he's adjusted the game plan to work as a team. It's not just, like, a few superstars carrying the load. Yeah. So I actually have the Islanders winning this series I even had that goat before the first game. So, like, I just think the Islanders, there's on a roll. Like, I don't even know which goalie's playing right now. Like, it seems like any goalie just, like, wins. Like, they don't care who's in that.
I don't know. I haven't really been following that much, game by game at least. But I know Sorokin played a lot of the first round, and I haven't really noticed since. I think it's been...
Yeah, I think it was a stat. I think they said, like, it was the first time in, like, 40 years or something that one goalie won the four games in the first round, and then the other goalie won four games in the second round.
Yeah, that's wild. It's awesome that Varlamov and Sorokin have just such a great tandem right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe, yeah, they're both signed in the next year, so that's fantastic.
And Sorokin's exempt from the drafts, or from the Seattle draft, so they're keeping both of them.
Yeah, that's just... That's a really good way. And I don't know how much of it was planned on Sorokin coming over this year instead of last year or what, but great asset management, just like,
for sure.
Yeah. So fantastic job by Lou. And that's another thing that I was just about to mention is not only is Barry Trotz a fantastic coach, Lou Lamoriello does a great job. Cause I mean, you could put Barry Trotz on Ottawa and he would run all four lines, but then you're going to run Anisimov in overtime instead of Cizikas. Like,
oh, can't wait.
I couldn't imagine. But yeah, I do think Tampa has the manpower to do this. I mean, they're four of the top five scorers in the playoffs right now.
That's so stupid.
Kucherov with 19 and then the rest of the team at 13. Like, it's ridiculous. Obviously, I'm cheering for hometown guy Alex Killorn from Halifax. So, yeah, it's good to see... And he's doing fantastic. He's got 13 points as well.
He's doing great.
But yeah, I think Tampa's got this in six or seven. There's no way that New York goes down without a fight. And yeah, I just think Tampa Bay, you can't count them out. They're going to go for the two-peat. So.
Yeah, honestly, as long as it's not Montreal that wins the cup, I just want to see good hockey at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. So Tampa Bay, what do you think about them and... spending $100 million.
Honestly, it's the loophole, and I think it's the most egregious it's ever happened. Like, every year that something like this does happen, like, to go over the cap, or even teams like Ottawa use the LTIR contracts to get to the floor.
Yeah.
So like, it's been abused forever, and it's just the most egregious it's ever happened. The fact that they're 18-20 million over the cap now, but it's. As long as the league doesn't enforce it and it's a technical loophole, like, go for it, like, all the power to them. I think it should be addressed, but they could have changed it a while ago and they decided to keep it. So if the league's going to allow it, like, all the power to them, every team should try and somehow get around the cap. Just make super teams, don't care.
I agree. You didn't have Nikita Kucherov all year, so he's going on a year without playing. If he wants to come back in the playoffs because the rules say he can, great. The thing is, how do you know that Kucherov wasn't ready 3 weeks before the playoffs?
Yeah, that's the thing, because he was skating like 6 weeks or so before playoffs started.
Yeah, so that's where I don't like it. I think the league has to change something because this is ridiculous. But good on Tampa for doing it. Like, Julian Brisebois is doing a fantastic job in Tampa Bay. And to think, like, everyone said when he got hired that Steve Yzerman just set him up and he's not going to have to do a thing. He's done fantastic work since getting there, almost better than what Yzerman set him up with.
Yeah, and I think the thing, like, underrated that's helped out Tampa, like, when Kucherov went on the LTIR and then, like, Ottawa made that trade to send Gavrik and Nilsson's contract to help him out for the extra pick. But was they then had the cap space to sign Cernak, Cirelli, and Sergachev. Because going into last offseason, a lot of people thought, like, one of these guys is going to get offer sheeted, which never happens, or just, like, you're going to have to trade one. You can't afford them all. But then the Kucherov contract goes on LTIR, and it's like, oh, look, we can afford all these really good young players now for the next, like, 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I'm interested to see where they go this offseason. Every year, it seems like people think, it's like, oh, this is the year Tampa's going to have to get rid of a bunch of players, but they're going to find a way around it again. Because I think even with the LTIR contracts off, there's still, like, $5 or $6 million over the cap going into next offseason.
Yeah, it's like 4.8 or something like that right now.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what they do in the offseason.
And it'll be, it'll be really interesting because some people are talking about how like Cirelli had a pretty down year. Did he just have a really good year last year? And just like all these bottom end guys, obviously they're still trying to shop Tyler Johnson. Is Seattle going to take somebody that doesn't have a cap hit really? Because why help them out? Like, so yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Tampa in the offseason because there's so many things that could happen and a lot of things that won't happen that we think will.
Yeah, like I'm interested to see because, like, if I'm Seattle, like, I'm not touching Johnson's contract because I believe he's from the Washington area, like, from the West Coast. So, like, a lot of people are like, oh, it makes sense for him to go there. It's like, well, he's a fourth line guy making, like, what, $6 million or something for the next 4 years?
Yeah, 5.3, I believe. But yeah, like,
yeah, so it's like you'd have to, like, give them a lot of stuff to take that contract. If I'm Tampa, I'm just trying to take, like, Ross Colton breakout year this year. It's like, hey, I can take that guy for less than $1 million.
Yeah. So before we move on, there's kind of a big topic to end things off here. But now that we're talking about the expansion draft, I saw this on Twitter from Jamie, who is our design guy here at New Era Hockey Network. Would you – what was it? So Seattle sends two firsts to Buffalo, and Buffalo takes Okposo, Skinner, and Eichel.
Who
says no? Like, it's one of those trades that you don't expect any, like, how many people are going to have enough bad contracts to level out the value of Eichel? Well, with the two firsts going back. So that would give Buffalo first and second this year, and then probably another top 10 pick, top 15 pick maybe. Next year, so that's four top 10 picks in the next 2 years. So with that said, you also shed $25 million.
That is very interesting because I think the big thing with Buffalo is, are they gonna, like, I don't know what their direction is. Like, are they gonna commit to another full-on rebuild, like, even though this one's like obviously failed, like the team's still at the bottom of the league? Are they gonna try and like make Eichel, Reinhardt, and I know, like, I think New Jersey's interested in Ristolainen for some reason. So are they going to turn all those guys into, like, players that can play now, or are they just going to go full-on rebuild? So I don't know what direction they're going to go. If they go rebuild, I think you probably – I'd probably lean toward Buffalo saying no, because Eichel should get a king's ransom in value. And trying to use his value to try and, like, raise up Skinner and Okposo's value – just to get out of those contracts. Like, I don't know if you really have to do that if you want full on rebuild, because your team's going to suck anyway, and you can just have them there.
Yeah.
So I'd probably lean to, I think it's really interesting. I could see it's something like that happening, because like Skinner's contract's got to be the worst in the league.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see him getting back to like 40 goal score anytime soon.
No.
But yeah, it's interesting because I don't even, how many years does Okposo have left on his?
I think next year is Okposo's last year at $6 million. He might have two more.
Yeah, so if it's like 1 or 2 years, I don't think it's the biggest issue to keep him around. So I'd probably lean towards Buffalo and say no, because they could get a lot of value for Eichel just on his own. And then Skinner, maybe he becomes a half decent player again and is like worth like half of his contract. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting trade, though. Could be something there.
So, Okposo has 2 years after this year left. So, next year and then the year after.
Yeah, like, it sucks with Okposo. Those injuries, like, killed his career.
Yeah. He had a really unfortunate, not even ending of his career, because I think he still plays a little bit. Not great. Yeah, he was great, and now just kind of fallen off ever since he's gotten battled and bruised. So, so we can move on to our last topic here. And so this was pointed out on Twitter by Locked On Sens. And so over the last two drafts, Ottawa had 16 picks. 12 of those are already signed. So the four that aren't signed is Tyler Cleven, Jake Sanderson, Philip Dost, and Eric Engstrand. So obviously Cleven had a okay year in the NCAA. Sanderson is just out of this world just going back for another year because he can. Yeah. Doust had a great year in Moncton. And Engstrand, I didn't really follow him much this year. So I'm not too sure about him, actually.
Yeah, from what I know about Engstrand, like, he is a just big power forward, but projection, like, not a lot of ceiling there. Like, he's at best, like, probably like a fourth line Austin Watson type.
Yeah.
But and I think he had like 4 points or something in like 30 something games. So, like, I don't have, he was what, their last pick of the draft, I think.
Yeah, so, last or second last.
Yeah, so, like, I know Daoud, yeah, he did have a good year. So that was actually a nice surprise. And then obviously Sanderson, he'll get a contract after next year, and Clevin, hopefully in the next, like, what, two, three years or so, however long it stays.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, looking at, like, it is really impressive when you actually look at the list, which I am right now. And yeah, like, all these guys, like I think all these guys do have a solid chance of at least making the NHL in some capacity.
Yeah, so of these 12 guys, I mean, so I'll read the list right now. At third overall, we drafted Tim Stützle. At 19th overall, we drafted Lapsley Thompson. 28th, Ridley Gregg. 32, Shane Pinto. 33, Roby Yarventi. 37, Mads Sogard. 61, Igor Sokolov. 71, Levi Mirolainen. 94, Victor Lodin. 125, Mark Kastelic. 181, Cole Reinhart, and 191, Max Gonette. So those are players mix and match from the last two drafts. But yeah, so Stützle, obviously an NHLer. Pinto, very likely, he's already played quite a bit in the NHL. Yep. So I guess we can just kind of go down this list really quick. So what do you think about Thompson? Do you think he has a shot?
Yeah, I think he'll get a cup of coffee this coming year. Like, especially if, like, because injuries, like, last year Ottawa was pretty fortunate with the injury bug. Like, other than Watson and Chabot on and off, they really weren't too hurt from what I can remember, like, other than goal.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I think he'll get a taste, because he definitely got better over the course of the year in Belleville. Like, at the start, you could tell he was rough around the edges, getting accustomed to the smaller ice again. But by the end of the year, he was playing good hockey. But definitely needs to work on the defensive side of the game. And he is actually very aggressive. Like, not so much as, like, offensive, but, like, he will go for the big hits,
yeah,
which you love to see, but you got to be smart about that, because he oftentimes does get out of position trying to do that. Yeah. But I think he has a ceiling to be, like, a second pair power play guy. They can fill in, like, on the top unit, like, be a decent offensive guy. But I think his floor is really low as well. Yeah. So he may never get a full-time NHL job, may become like one of those like quadruple A, really good AHL guys.
Yeah.
But like, I think he does have a decently high ceiling too. So he's very interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I agree. He's gotten a lot of praise from Troy Mann, and he plays with so much heart, and like, you can tell that he wants to win every game that he plays, and he wants to win every shift that he's on. And he's just, like you said, adjusting. And that was the biggest thing for the first half of the season, was getting used to, again, the smaller ice surface. Obviously in Finland, he played on a much bigger surface. So yeah. Lassie Thompson, that was with Columbus's first rounder last year. Yep. And then at 28 this year, we drafted Ridley Gregg. What do you think? Where do you think he's headed?
I think he is for sure going to be an NHLer. Like, I think he's the kind of opposite of Thompson. I think he has a very high floor. Like, I think he's going to be at least like a third line center wing. Like, I'm not too sure if he's going to stick to center in the NHL, but especially just the way he plays, the physical side of the game, defensively responsible, like that Brad Marchand-esque, like, getting people's skins quality about him. Like, teams are going to want this guy in their lineup.
Yeah.
His ceiling is the thing that's like, how offensive is he going to be in the NHL? Like, is he going to be able to be a second line guy and get some power play time, or is he just going to be like a third line PK guy? So, like, I think he's for sure an NHL player, and probably going to be some type of middle six, all situations, patio type guy.
Yeah, and I think at least the perspective that we had on Pageau when we traded him, kind of a career hot, really high end 3C. Yep. But like a perfect third line center that anybody would want. I think that's Ridley Gregg's floor. And I think there's not a huge gap between where his floor and his ceiling are. Because I think he'll be anywhere between a Pajot and a Kadri. And I think those are two pretty good timeline stop points for him to grow into. He definitely plays a very similar game to both and is succeeding with it. So he's doing really good in WHL.
Yeah, for sure.
So Roby Järventi, drafted at 33. This was a hot pick for some people. Some people liked it. Some people hated it. What do you think about it?
I think I like the pick a lot. I know there are always going to be those people that like we should have taken Peterka for the German connection with Stutzla. Yep. But it's funny to see because like you see so much. It's like Sens need to stop drafting best friends. Like, you need to go for the best player available. And then the first time they do it and they draft Järventi, they're like, no, you should have gone for the best friend. I'm like, oh, God, you can't. People are going to be mad no matter what you do. But anyway, I like the pick because he's a very nonsense pick, and they like their high floor, lower ceiling guys.
Yeah.
And Järventi's like the typical boomer bust. Like, this guy's going to be a top six scoring winger that's going to pot like 30 goals, or he's never going to make it. Like, he doesn't have the skill set, like the physicality, the defensive game, to really be a bottom six type, a typical bottom six player. But if he can put it all together, like, he has the speed, he does have the size, and he has a hell of a shot. So I think he could be like a Mike Hoffman-esque player for the Sens. Like, it's fine to have those zero calorie, like, goal scorers that they can shoot the puck and put it in the net, and that's all they do. Like, yeah, they're absolutely fun players to have if you use them right. So I think that's what Järventi could be, like a second line power play Mike Hoffman type dude.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously I'm not making a comparison here, but like, look at Ovechkin. Other than his physicality, all he does is stand still in a circle and shoot the puck when it comes to him. Like, the skill set doesn't have to be super wide range. You just have to be really good at what you do. And if that's what you do, that's what you do. So if we can get Järventi in as even just a power play specialist at some point, just with that shot and put him on the wall, it'll be fantastic. So, yeah, I do think Järventi has a career looking forward in the NHL.
Yeah, like even if he becomes like for Buffalo, they have Victor Olofsson. He's not the best 5-on-5 guy, but he is a great player on the power play and gets most of his points there. But I think plays on the third line 5-on-5. So that could be Järventi for the Sens in like 2-3 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mads Sogaard,
goalie, weird. I don't know much about goalies, but I know a 6'8" or however big he is these days. I know that's better. Bigger frame stops more pucks. But what was he, 7-0 when Belleville started his HL career? Like, that's as good as it gets. Like, you can't ask for much more. So he looked great, and like he was picked in the second round. They traded up to get the guy.
Yep.
So they definitely have faith in him, and he showed. Like, I know he had kind of a down year in the WHL last year, but this year in Denmark and then the AHL, like, he's been great. So goalies are weird. Next year he could be a bum. Next year he could be in the NHL as a backup. I don't know, but I think he has good of a chance to become the starter in a few, in like 5 years, as any guy in the system.
Yeah, I think right now, obviously Gustafsson is the closest, but Sogaard is the top of my list for like the projection that they have. And I think Sogaard is going to be a fantastic starter in the NHL someday. Mm-hmm. And it was actually really weird because he has the 7-0 record, but he only had a .917 save percentage, which was like, yeah, that's really good and everything. But if you're 7-0, you'd think it'd be higher.
Yeah, because I know his, like, from what I watched a lot of his games, he got his numbers kind of got tanked a bit. Like, I think in the first game, he had like a .950 save percentage, and like 2 seconds left in the game, they scored. So it went down to like a .890. It's like, oh, that looks worse than it was. And that happened a few times. And there was one game where I think he got lit up for like 5 goals on 20 shots or something. Yeah. But the thing I like about him, like, also, he has sick flow. Like, that's a big plus. Like, I love the hair on the guy. But also, he does kind of play with an attitude. Like, if someone gets up in his face, like, he's a 6'8" goalie. He will give it back to you, and he's not afraid to fight. He'd throw a blocker in your face, which I love to see.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And just watching Sogaard, that team loved playing in front of him, too. So,
for sure.
Yeah, definitely think he has an NHL career as well. Whether it be with Ottawa, with this flooded crease. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But he definitely has a career. Igor Sokolov at 61.
Hall of Fame player. Put his number in the rafters already.
Yeah, I think he had a fantastic rookie season in Belleville. So,
for sure. Like, he led the AHL in rookie goal scoring, which, yeah, I know he was like a two-time overager, so he's older. But even to someone like Arthur Kaliev, who's a year younger and was like the guy the Sens passed on, like, Sokolov outscored him. Yeah. And Belleville was bad to start the year, too. Like, they were struggling to do anything right. So the fact he ended up having as good of a year as he did is awesome. And I can't remember the time it seems like the fan base has just gravitated towards this guy and everyone loves him and everyone wants this guy to succeed and become, like, be a Sen. Which, yeah. I can't remember the last time, like, this has happened with a prospect. It's, like, this guy wasn't, like, a top-end pick. He was a late second-round pick, overager.
But yeah, this is everyone, like,
loves the guy.
Yeah, this is, like, when we drafted Batherson. I don't know why, but everybody just loved him. And oh, sure. Here he is today. So
it's the East Coast connection.
Yeah, hopefully we see something like that. The Nova Scotia boys.
Oh, for sure. I see Sokolov like probably like a third line power play, like power forward type guy. If like he doesn't have to be the best, like his skating looks a lot better already. And like Mark Stone's a perfect example. You don't need to be like a McDavid type skater to succeed in the NHL. He's have to be a smart player, which Sokolov is a smart player. So I think he does have a career in the NHL. I don't know how much of the offense would translate, but I think if you get this guy like in the bumper slot in front of the net on like a second power play unit down the line, and he'll get some games this year with Ottawa for sure.
Yeah, and like what it might just be because of injury or whatever, sure. Yep. But he will definitely get a look at the NHL. So for these last five, we'll just kind of quickly go through them. We got Miro Lainen, just signed his entry level yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Like goalie, really young goalie that did really well in the Finnish Junior League. And I think the Karpat system, I know Blomqvist is right in front of him, so I don't know how much time he's going to get there. So hopefully he gets some good playing time and some action in the Liga. But he's a young goalie. I'll probably not forget about him until he's 25.
Yeah. 20-0-3. That's a fantastic record to have.
Yep.
So, yeah, coming out of Finland, I'm sure he'll do fantastic. I assume he's going to stay there next year.
I assume.
Just because we have so many in the net. Victor Lodin.
Yeah, well, he had a great year in the Allsvenskan for, I believe he played for Timrå. But so I don't know how much of that, because I know he played with Dahlin, who also just signed a contract with the Sharks.
The best ex-senator on San Jose.
Oh, no. Actually, a lot of the Balsers and Jaros are over there. Jesus.
And Carlson, of course.
Oh, yeah, that guy. but so anyway, like Lodin seems like, I don't know. I think he's probably just going to max out as like a really good AHLer that can hop up in case of injuries or whatever. But you need guys like that in the AHL. It's up to him if he wants to stay in that role. Like, for all I know, he could become like, because I think he's more of a offensive guy and like would probably need top 6 minutes to succeed. And like if injuries happen, like, yeah, toss him in for a game or two, see how he collects. But my expectations for Lodin aren't the highest.
No, me either. And there was a bit of some controversy with him last summer. So we'll see if that sticks or if it's just wiped clean or what happens with that.
Yeah, for sure.
But he has the same skill set as Järventi, which I find really funny. But yeah. I just don't think his skill set is quite to the level that Järventi's is yet. I hope to see Lodin succeed, but I'm not sure.
Oh, for sure. And Lodin was like, he was a later round pick and an overager as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So expectations a bit lower because Järventi is one of the youngest in his draft class.
Yeah. And then we have Mark Kastelic.
I love this guy. another overager, which Sens love to do with their mid round picks, which I think is a fine strategy. I know they get criticized a lot for it. But having these guys, you can just plop right into the AHL if you want and see how they adapt. And Castle, like was great for the team. I know the offense, like I think he had like 10 points or something like that. But he played mostly a third-line role. And I can see this guy being like a quality bottom six, like grinder in the NHL.
Yeah, he fits in on that Belleville team perfectly too. He plays that system. So I really hope to see him succeed as well. And I think he does have like a Nick Paul kind of role in the NHL in the future.
Yeah, an underrated part of him, I think, like, I don't know where his faceoff numbers were, but I know he dominated the faceoff dot down in Belleville. Like, he was their key faceoff guy.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out. I didn't watch a ton of Belleville this year. So, yeah, next is Cole Reinhardt, who also played a lot in Belleville this year.
Yep, another overager. And him and Kaslik basically were just, like, bash brothers on the third line. Like, they just glued at the hip to each other. And, like, Reinhardt surprised. Like, I didn't have high expectations for him. Like, when he was drafted, I'm like, oh, sixth round, overager. We'll see what he is. But he was good in Belleville. Like, he had that one OT winner where it showed that he does have that high-end skill if he gives a chance to use it. But realistically, I think he's a similar boat to Kastelic, just as like a winger version of him, where they're if they make the NHL, they're going to be like bottom six PK energy guys, which you need those guys in the system.
Yeah, absolutely. And like they're a really good comparison for those two together, actually, is Paul and Connor Brown. Like you always have Connor Brown is kind of the high-end Kastelic comparison. And then Reinhardt is more like Paul, where he's more buried on the third and fourth line in the minimal role, but does a fantastic job of it anyway, but they always just find a way to play together. Definitely.
I'm excited to see them play next year.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And especially because like we have no idea who is going to make what team. Like there are so many people that are fighting for a spot. So to finish this off, we have Max Gonette. What do you think about him?
Had a pretty solid, like I think he played for Valdor. Yep. But yeah, he had a pretty solid season from what I could tell. Like, I didn't really see much of him. But I know he is described more as an offensive-minded right shot guy. And for a seventh-round pick, like, to get a contract at all, that's great. And if he can hop into Belleville's, like, weakest area was their defense last year.
So, and we lost quite a few defensemen on Belleville, actually.
Yeah, like, Branstrom graduated, Lajoie, Yarosh, and Willanen gone. And then even, like, Hubie Labrie signed in Germany. Golubev, I doubt he comes back. So, and Olsen just signed the KHL.
Yep.
So, like, I think it's just Lassie Thompson and, like, Colby Williams right now hanging out on the blue line.
Yeah.
That I can think of. But, so it looks like from JBD's deployments at the end of the season, I assume he's going to start out in the AHL, which I think is perfectly fine. But it looks like they're going to have a right side of, in some order, like JBD, Thompson, Gannett.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good right side.
Left side, whoever. Just whoever find fits. Someone. But Gannett, for a seventh round pick, like obviously if he plays any in the NHL, that's a success.
Yeah.
And if he does well in the AHL and raises his value, like maybe he gets traded out down the line. But he got his contract. I'm excited to see how he does for Belleville and hopefully helps out the blue line.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be really cool to see, again, like I just said, all these people fighting for a spot because we're going to have a training camp this year. We didn't have that this last year, and hopefully we are able to watch it somehow. It'll be really cool to see all of the guys progress because everybody that I just named is 21 or younger. Like, that was a very, very young list of all people that we just said are probably going to make the NHL. Like, Ottawa has done a fantastic job drafting, and we're seeing this now because we're flooded with almost NHL-ready players. Like, I don't know what our lineup looks like opening night next year, but there's a lot of guys that are going to be on the outside looking in that deserve a spot.
Yeah, and like Ottawa's done a good job. They have their high-end guys. They have the Stutzlers, the Norrises, the Pintos. But then they also got all these, like we didn't even mention Park and Kelly because he wasn't drafted. He was signed.
Yeah.
But, like, he has a very good chance to make the team out of camp. Like, from all we've heard, like, he's won the Petrie Award twice for hardest worker. And from all accounts, everyone loves the guy.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job of getting these, like, depth-type players like the Kellys, the Kastelic, the Reinhardts that can fill, like, be your bottom six in a few years. Yeah. And guys coming up through the system, like, playing together and that know each other, like, that's awesome to have. So I think the Sens have done a good job with, like, prospect depth and the high-end guys.
Yep.
So, like, no complaints.
Yeah, and, like, that's what we get for it sucked, but we had the tank for the last couple of years. We had to do that rebuild to get these Stutzels and Norrises and all this, and that's obvious. But it's beyond that for drafting these guys. Like, Pierre Dorion and his draft team is just genius. Like, and the Mann brothers, they're just, like, what a trio that is, Dorion and the Manns. It's just anything is possible with literally any asset. Like, you look at Dezingle, he was flipped for 2 seconds and Duclair. Like, what? And then those 2 seconds are used to draft, I don't know who exactly it was, but, like,
I actually don't think they used any of them to draft. I think they got traded the one for Stepan and the one for Murray.
You're right. Yep.
So the initial trade was good.
Yeah, the initial trade was good. But yeah, I don't think I have anything else to add. Do you?
Not that I can think of. Yeah, there's not, other than the Capuano stuff and the Marilyn and signing, there's not really a lot of Sens news.
No, not really. There's just been a lot of people talking. Everybody drooling over Dougie Hamilton, and a lot of people going and saying that maybe Seth Jones is an answer, which I don't agree with.
No, I don't want Jones.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things that can happen. Probably not a lot of things that will happen. But yeah, this offseason should be pretty busy for Ottawa in terms of news. In terms of putting pen to paper, I don't see a lot of things happening. But yeah, I don't know. There'll be a lot of stuff going on for us to talk about. And a lot of stuff on the side, like I mentioned earlier. We got a mock draft coming out this week. Look out for that on the YouTube channel. And yeah, thanks for coming to watch. This has been the New Era Sens podcast. I'm Jacob, and I'm with Jordan. And yeah, thanks for coming to listen.
Yep, thanks, guys. See ya.